Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. We had an amazing 11 inches of snow this week, and it was a record, most ever, and it was a lot of fun. We don't have any means of plowing the roads or anything down here, so everything was closed for a couple days, Walmarts, gas stations. But the kids had a great time playing out in the snow and making snowmen and everything, something that happens about every 30 years here in Lower Alabama. You get a snow, usually it's just a couple of inches, but we got 11, and anyway, it was a lot of fun. Those watching on Rumble, please like, share, and follow. That helps us a lot. But also, if you haven't done it yet, download the Brave browser, which is a great browser to use anyway, because it doesn't track and trace you and gather information on everything that you do. But when you watch the Rumble videos through Brave browser, our videos or anybody else's, I've been doing it this week, there's no commercials. You don't have to sit there through the same dumb commercials 100 times. But anyway, wanted to let you know about that. Also want to let you know, some of you that watch on Agenda Weekly, somehow the company we use for that is having trouble with our videos, probably nobody else's, of course. So that's why we had the Rumble link posted instead of the other one. But sorry about that. We're trying to fix it. Subscribers, thank you so much. Again, for all you do, don't ever think that we take that for granted or just assume you're going to continue to do that. We appreciate it greatly and would encourage those that like these shows to become a subscriber at agendaweekly.com and be part of what we're doing. I'd again like to ask anyone that would like me to come speak to your group or church this year in 2025, please contact us by emailing us at theagendamovie@protonmail.com and put in the subject line meeting, and we're going to see what we're able to do this year. Also, those in the Northeast, we normally don't travel there very much because it's such a liberal area, but we've had a few people ask. So if you're in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, please let us know if you have a group there or a church that would like me to come speak to them, because we'd be happy to do that, and we'll see what we're able to work out through this year. I'm sorry about my voice being so weak today. It's just, it happens to me all the time. But this episode is going to be part two of what really happened on September 11th. If you haven't watched the first one, we've got the link below. It was just a few weeks back that we covered that. It's vital information to know. It's September 11th is the most significant event that's happened in our lifetime. Our parents' generation, it was the assassination of John F. Kennedy, which the facts are all finally coming out and shows that what they suspected was true, that LBJ had something to do with this and whatever. But September 11th is one that we have to understand for our generation, so we realize again how evil man can be. So we're never caught off guard by patriotic words, by flag waving, by chants of USA, USA. We're not sidetracked by that. We only are looking for actions. We're only looking for consistency in what's going on. And so anyway, that's what's going to be covered today. I'm going to talk about a few key news stories first. But Richard Gage, it's an interview with him. He is an architect that from him gathering information in the last 15, 20 years about September 11th, has had 3,600 other architects sign on and say what they told us happened did not happen. It's a lie. We need a new investigation. And it's one of those things, again, if you are not aware of this, it kind of hits you like, oh, you got to be kidding. That's crazy. That's what I thought the first probably 10 years I heard people tell me, I think it's an inside job. And I thought, oh, brother, our site is filled with idiots. Well, finally, after 10 years of people bugging me about it, I finally said, okay, I need to investigate this. And I spent 1 week, about 40 to 50 hours, watching every documentary, every show, every special on what really happened September 11th. That was about in 2011 or 12. And I realized instantly and so clearly we were lied to. George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld are the ones that pulled off September 11th. And it's concrete, it's scientific, it's not, again, well, we've got a lot of evidence for this. We have proof because the way the buildings collapsed and things defy the laws of physics. So we know, okay, the plane didn't take down the buildings, the fires didn't take down the buildings, because they cannot. And that's what this video is going to explain to you in scientific detail, so you know that, because you need to know that, because you have to be set free from these lies that really are so damaging to people when they just believe the narrative, even when their eyes have seen things that should have told them, wait a minute, something's wrong here. How can a building fall at free fall speed when the entire structure below is undamaged and getting stronger and stronger each floor that goes down, and other things like that. But watch this and share it because it's so, so important. But watch the first part of this if you haven't seen the rest. Mark Twain once said that it's really easy to get people to believe a lie, but it's the hardest work ever to undo the lie you've got them to believe. And that's for sure. And 9/11 is that. There's so many different issues and problems with it, but Richard Gage does a great job, and on his website, there's a lot more information there, but it's obvious for those who have eyes to see that that was an inside job by our government. It was a controlled demolition. As once you watch the films after studying this, like I did, I thought, oh my goodness, didn't my eyes recognize that the 100,000 tons of concrete and the 80,000 tons of steel structure when the buildings were collapsing was just blowing into the air, into the wind, and covered a 5-mile circle with 3 inches of concrete dust. Well, if a building's collapsing, it doesn't just vaporize all the concrete and the steel, where at the bottom there was nothing left. The 110 floors of 1 acre size each, solid concrete floors at the bottom, they should have all been pancaked together if the building had just fallen. Like earthquakes, sometimes buildings fall and things, and all the floors are just pancaked together. There is not one floor at the bottom of the 110-story building. But there's things like that that once you see, you're like, oh, that's pretty obvious. And there's other things he doesn't even get into. There's so much that I discovered as I researched this. But I'm going to start with this now, and I'll stop it every so often and comment. But very important to really understand this so you can be set free from the lies and those around us. Because, as again, people are awakened that they were brainwashed into believing lies, they start then pursuing the truth, which is our whole purpose here on this earth, to direct them to the ultimate truth of Jesus. But a lot of times, understanding some conspiracies is the first thing that pulls back the curtain. So you start that pursuit.
When we talked about World Trade Center Building 7, what we found was that it was unmistakably, irrefutably, a controlled demolition. Now, this happened on 9/11. It's part of the conspiracy, however we define that word, of 9/11. It is a real problem for the official narrative. And so if Building 7 was a controlled demolition, we have to ask ourselves, is it possible that the Twin Towers could also be a crime of unimaginable proportions? So we have made the docuseries 9/11 Crime Scene to Courtroom to bring all of this evidence to bear in a special grand jury investigation. So today we're giving you a sneak peek, the audience here, of the deep dive into the evidence of the World Trade Center Twin Towers. And yes, it is in fact extraordinary what we're going to find. And first, just looking at them, we note that, gosh, they were hailed by some as the crowning achievement when they were built in the mid-70s, early 70s. And others thought it was just heartless modernism. You extrude two squares until they become the tallest buildings in the world. Well, compare that to what we had as high-rise architecture before the modern era with a beautiful unfolding massing of the Art Deco design of the Empire State Building. So just to give us a little bit of perspective here, but there were many engineering innovations associated with this new design of skyscraper reaching heights never before reached. These were the tallest buildings in the world at the time that they were built. So one of the things they had to do was get 50,000 occupants in each tower and 140,000 visitors per day up to their places of meeting and working. And so they did that by dividing the tower into three stages. And you take an elevator up and then transfer over and take another elevator. This was never done or had to be done before. An extraordinary feat. But the structural innovations were even more startling. We had a forest of columns in all the skyscrapers before this. And what we had was, with the Twin Towers, they moved half of those columns to the exterior, creating an exoskeleton with these prefabricated, welded in the shop, exterior structural steel perimeter sections with three vertical columns, three stories tall, and three horizontal spandrel panels holding them all together, welded. And they were bolted in place. In the center was 47 massive core columns. They created an incredible opportunity for a lot of space between the core and the perimeter by laying these lightweight steel trusses between the two, spanning 60 feet on two sides, and then the other two sides, 35 feet. So that created an open office planning. Each tower had 3.8 million square feet. Each floor was an acre in size. So you can see that compared to the Empire State Building, we had wide open office areas now without all this forest of columns that they had to deal with. However, the ceilings were relatively low, 9 feet for such a long space. And this was intimidating for some psychologically, as was the marching of these columns all the way around the exterior. Felt like a jail cell. These were some of the drawbacks. There were other drawbacks, such as the asbestos, which in the late 60s was put into all of these buildings, including this one, which required a $3 to $5 billion abatement that the city of New York was requiring the Port Authority to get rid of all this asbestos in this building, according to federal law. So these buildings were, for these sorts of reasons, only about half occupied by many researchers' estimates at the time of 9/11. They were white elephants. Nobody wanted them. And yet, Larry Silverstein went and purchased them for $3.2 billion, having invested only $15 million of his own money and leveraged that highly, putting massive terrorist insurance that was never on the building before he acquired these properties just 6 weeks prior to 9/11.
Another thing he doesn't get into, but I'd come up as I researched this carefully, there were so many people that had shorted the airline industry and the stocks the week before September 11th, which means you're predicting that the stocks are going to drop dramatically. And there was big players that went in with millions of dollars and said, yeah, we think all the airlines are going to drop dramatically in the next week. And then they did, and then they sold those shorts and they made a fortune. And when our government, the research committee to investigate September 11th, that was brought to their attention, they said, well, we don't think any terrorists were involved with that, so we're not digging into that. They didn't realize, no, it was the terrorists who did that. It was the people from within. To me, things like that, the short selling of the stocks, the double insurance on the building the week before things, it just... those are the clearest and biggest red flags to me, even more than the science of it, because I know human nature. Men always take advantage of the lies that they are telling other people.
Putting massive terrorist insurance that was never on the building before he acquired these properties just 6 weeks prior to 9/11. So we keep this in mind because this sets a context for these crimes that we're going to be taking a look at that the 9/11 Commission mostly ignored, but they did admit that they were set up to fail in this review of the crimes of 9/11. That this is not to be considered the last word on the attacks, the report, but only a beginning. And Tim Romer citing, we were extremely frustrated with the false statements that we were getting. That means lies. Max Cleland resigns from the commission, citing, the investigation is compromised. It's a national scandal. America's being cheated. The White House wants to cover it up. Well, these alone are reasons for requiring a new investigation. Their own lawyer, John Farmer, cited in his book, The Ground Truth, I was shocked at how different the truth was from the way it was described. There was an agreement not to tell the truth to the American people. So we're setting a context for doubt here. He says what the government and military officials told Congress, the commission, the media, and the public about who knew what and when was almost entirely and inexplicably untrue, meaning the whole thing was a lie. Well, let's start looking at that lie. We had shock and awe on 9/11. We were put back into a place psychologically due to the trauma to all of us, especially those in New York, who were tuned in to what was happening. We were subjected to these attacks, destroying our cultural icons, killing thousands of people, jumping out of the buildings. Well, we have had a lot of time, 20 years now, to look back, to begin to be willing to look back, because this was very, very painful for the last 20 years. When we do, we find, as we step out from our shock-induced trance and evaluate this new evidence that most people are unaware of, as we found out in our episode on Building 7, most architects and engineers are completely unaware that a third tower collapsed on 9/11. So now we're going to look and see and just remind ourselves, you know, what happened that morning?
On September 11, we learned that 4 passenger planes were hijacked and taken radically off course. Within an hour, 2 of the planes had flown into the enormous steel towers of the World Trade Center, creating fires and eventually toppling. Dazed by the news, the American public soon believed the fires in the towers had burned so hot they caused the steel frames of the buildings to give way. A myth developed, fed by official sources through the media to a bewildered audience. Elements of the myth: the impact of the airplanes, gallons of burning jet fuel, steel melting, the buildings failing, and suddenly imploding. In a mere 10 seconds, 110 stories hurtled earthward, pulverizing into dust. Right from the start, on the street itself, the official story was born.
Come out of nowhere and just scream right into the side of the Twin Tower, exploding through the other side. And then I witnessed both towers collapse, one first and then the second, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense.
The myth bled into the FEMA report and was echoed by the expert.
It was the combination of the impact load doing great damage to the building, followed by the fire, that caused collapse.
Well, there's the official story in a nutshell, and we should examine that, and that's what we're about today. Is that true? Is it the fires that brought the towers down? The North Tower was hit at about 8:46 by the plane. It collapsed over an hour later. So it's not the planes and the massive explosion and the broken columns that brought down the tower. Nor was it the jet fuel, because NIST acknowledges that 90% of that jet fuel was burned up outside the building. The rest of it was gone in 10 minutes. It merely started the fires that are blamed for the collapse of these towers. The South Tower was hit about 9 in the morning. It collapses about an hour later. hour and a half later in the case of the North Tower, an hour later in the case of the South Tower by Flight 175. So there were some investigations into this, the failures of these towers, starting with volunteers from the American Society of Civil Engineers, very well-placed volunteers who worked themselves into the subsequent FEMA report, which finally received a little bit of funding, $600,000, hardly enough to set them up. But the New York Times notes that their investigations were hampered with bureaucratic restrictions. They couldn't get access to the blueprints of the building or adequate access to the site. In fact, they described it as a tour guide. They couldn't get out and really investigate. They didn't have access to the public to request photographs or videos. And so they produced a report in 2002, which led to a real, well, an increased amount of funding by NIST, $20 million anyway, who produced a report in 2005 about the Twin Towers. What was their essential report? That fires caused the weakening of the steel trusses, and they sagged. And when they sagged, they pulled in the perimeter columns. Well, sagging trusses can't pull in perimeter columns. There's not enough force there. But in their computer model, they added a 5,000-pound lateral force on each of the columns, forcing them to buckle, all of them. And then the top came down and drove the rest of the building down to the ground. We'll look at that in some detail. But this is the official story in a nutshell, and this is how they sought to prove it, by computer models. Because most of the steel, as we'll discover, was sent to China for recycling before investigators could get their hands on it and do a proper investigation. The fires, though, we have photographs of them. They are shown to be diminished at the time of the collapse. The thick black smoke indicates oxygen-starved cooler fires. So we have a problem. The fires aren't going to be able to produce what NIST said they produced. So we have to use the scientific method. What is that? We have a question. How do the towers collapse? We do background research, make observations, construct a hypothesis. That's our best guess as to how the towers came down. We make predictions. Was it the planes that brought them down? Maybe it was the ensuing fires, or maybe it was the ensuing explosions, which NIST has not documented whatsoever in their final report, but you'll see plenty of evidence of. In fact, controlled demolitions with explosions. So these are all hypotheses that we can test with experiments. We analyze the results. We draw conclusions. If the hypothesis is corroborated, we report the results in an open, transparent manner so all can build on the body of the work that we're doing here. If the hypothesis is not corroborated, we go back. We construct a new hypothesis. And that's what we're doing today, a new revised hypothesis to replace the faulty, fraudulent hypothesis that NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, who was tasked by Congress to explain these collapses to the American people, produced. So let's do it. Let's start with some background research. What are the forces that destroy buildings? Fire is certainly one of them. It's an organic, chaotic process. It burns in a certain area roughly about 20 minutes and then moves on looking for fresh new fuel sources. And NIST even acknowledges that the fires don't persist and didn't in any one location for more than about 20 or 30 minutes. Okay, well, that's very helpful. Have we ever lost a skyscraper? No, never have lost a skyscraper due to collapses, and we'll look at a few of them. But wood frame buildings, for instance, they would fall over. Any structure collapsing due to fire would fall over to the path of least resistance, straight down through the path of greatest resistance. And not in Los Angeles, where we had a 62-story building burning 3.5 hours over 5 floors, nor in Philadelphia, burning a 38-story building over 18 hours on 8 floors. So fires, when they cause, there was a fire in this building, the structure sags, as we saw in our last podcast with Building 7. We saw the Cardington test. They actually lit on fire an 8-story building, a steel frame building, failure at all. Not even since 9/11, with these fully engulfed fires, have we lost a steel frame fire-protected structure. So how in the world, then, did these relatively small and cooler fires bring down the towers? Well, we'll find that they didn't, and we'll find the evidence for what did. But in natural collapses like these due to earthquakes, we have the building falling over to the path of least resistance. It's recognizable, though damaged, as a building. The columns and beams are not severed one from another, and the concrete is not pulverized to a fine powder. So this is another type of destruction that we need to keep in mind, because it's a precedent, as is buildings that have been blown up, where we have thick, billowing, enormous, pyroclastic-like clouds of smoke and pulverized concrete, sounds of explosions heard and seen by witnesses. We have flashes of light that are seen by witnesses. So if you have these features, you know you have explosions. Well, explosions can be harnessed quite well in controlled demolitions to bring buildings down, like you see here. It takes a team of experts to bring these buildings down with precisely placed and timed shaped cutter charges placed next to the columns and beams in the building, starting at the lower levels usually, and then bringing them up. This is a feat that only a handful of companies in the United States can even accomplish, and fire never has, not even in the Mandarin Hotel, where it's fully engulfed in Beijing, China in 2009. So it just simply does not happen. This building survived. All these buildings survived. Steel frame, fireproofed structures do not collapse due to fire. Not even at World Trade Center 5, which was fully engulfed in fire. Did it collapse? No. No collapse. So we have an understanding of the precedent here that NIST is up against when they try to present a collapse by fire theory and a few broken columns in the case of these towers. So last week, we looked carefully at the typical features of controlled demolition and how they amount to proof thereof. And so we have to look carefully now, today, at the features at the World Trade Center towers, beginning with feature number one. Is there a sudden onset of destruction? Well, the North Tower is at rest, and all of a sudden, it's in downward continuous motion. There's no jolt or hesitation upon meeting the cold, hard, intact steel below the point of plane impacts. What's going on here instead? Look at the South Tower. No jolt or hesitation. It's at rest, and all of a sudden, it's in uniform downward motion. No jolt, no hesitation, no impact. Well, let's look at the official narrative, because NIST claims that this upper block above the point of plane impacts drove the rest of the building down to the ground and then destroyed itself. This is called the crush down, crush up theory, but it suffers quite miserably from Newton's third law of motion. We'll come to that. But this author, Zdenek Bazant of Northwestern University in Chicago, submitted this paper, very complex paper, a paper that took engineers 10 years to decode. He submitted it just 2 days after 9/11. The rest of us were in shock, right? We're trying to figure out, when's the next plane coming? Who did this to us? What's going on here? And yet, this gentleman, no, he's in his den creating the most complex paper ever put together for building collapses. And he is creating the theoretical basis for NIST's column failure theory. So this paper remains the key support for NIST's theory. What does it rely on? Well, what it doesn't rely on is Newton's third law. There's an equal and opposite destructive force when two bodies collide. Run a Mack truck into a Volkswagen. What happens? the Volkswagen gets destroyed. Does it matter if we drop the Volkswagen onto the Mack truck? No. The upper part is the lightest part of any structure. It cannot possibly destroy the cold, hard, heavier, intact steel below. It's not going to happen. These towers were virtual pyramids. At the top is the lightest structural column sections, which you see here changing and getting heavier and heavier as we go down the building, and larger also in the core columns. Until at halfway, they're 52 inches by 22 inches, and then almost solid steel, 52 inches by 22 inches down at the bottom. So these are virtually pyramids. So we have to ask ourselves another question here. Is the top part destroying the lower part, or does the top part get destroyed in the first 3 seconds? Take a look. It's being destroyed. Let me make it easier for you. Actually, let's look at the lower red line. This top part is telescoping in on itself. The lower red line is not moving down. This structure is not destroying the structure below. It is being destroyed, just like the Volkswagen would be destroyed. In this case, what's destroying it, though? Because if it were there, we would see it driving the rest of the building down to the ground. But none of the photos, none of the videos show that. They show instead that it is gone after 3 seconds and something else is happening, something terrible. If the upper structure was driving the building down to the ground, it would have destroyed these few remaining columns, core columns that stand 1,000 feet in the air. But no, something else is happening here, and you get a sense of it by looking and trying to guess which one of these photos is a volcano and which one is the World Trade Center North Tower.
Keep watching this, but every time you see the building collapsing, just notice how it is going up and out. If it's crumbling down, it goes, gravity pulls straight down. It doesn't pull straight up and straight out. And concrete isn't vaporized where it covers 5 miles, 3 inches deep of the city, but also drifts into other states, unless something so powerful exploded that concrete into the finest dust you can imagine.
Just take a guess. I'll give you a hint. The one on the right is the volcano. With upward, outward arching streamers, a geometry of fireworks freely flying, solid objects trailing thick white smoke clouds in each case. Why is the Twin Tower ejecting solid objects trailing thick white smoke clouds? Steel is not flammable in office fire conditions, nor by jet fuel, as we'll see. So what are these thick white smoke clouds? Well, thermite can give us an answer, because the other byproduct of thermite, we saw that molten iron was one byproduct in our last episode, but what is the other byproduct? Aluminum oxide ash with these thick white smoke clouds. That is the only reasonable conclusion that can be drawn from this, especially when we look at, as we did last week, the evidence of thermite throughout the World Trade Center dust and in the aftermath. So this theory is wrong altogether. We don't have the upper part driving the rest of the building down to the ground. What do we have? The building is exploding, hurling laterally ejected structural steel sections out away from the core columns, and they survive that somehow, and then they come down. So none of this was acknowledged in the NIST report, who had $20 million to study this and determine, tasked by Congress to determine how and why all three towers collapsed. But let's look at feature number two of controlled demolition. Explosions Are there any witnesses of explosions? NIST says no. Other than the explosion, of course, of the plane impact, and what they say down at the bottom in the lobby are explosions due to jet fuel coming down the elevator shafts, which is just ludicrous. Come to that. But let's look at these witnesses. What do they say? This is extraordinary. There's now 186 of them. 12,000 pages of testimony were produced by the oral recordings of these first responders. Graham McQueen, professor, the late professor, read every one of those pages. This is what he found in 186 of these. I won't read them all to you, but a couple of representative examples. We felt the ground shake. You could see the tower sway, and then it just came down. All of a sudden, the ground just started shaking. Felt like a train running under my feet. The next thing we know, we look up, and the tower is collapsing. It shook my bones. Shortly before the first tower came down, I remember feeling the ground shaking. I heard a terrible noise, and then debris just started flying everywhere. Again and again, you're going to hear this same order of events where the first responders are seeing something, feeling something, hearing something before the tower actually collapses. Now, that's extraordinarily important and completely ignored by NIST, every one of these expert witnesses. I saw flash, flash, flash at the lower level of the building. You know, like when they demolish a building. With each popping sound, it was initially an orange and then a red flash that came out of the building. Then it would just go all around the building on both sides. Saw a number of brief light sources being emitted from inside the building between floors 10 and 15. He saw about six of these brief flashes accompanied by a crackling sound before the tower collapsed. I saw low-level flashes. I saw flash, flash, flash. And then it looked like the building came down. An explosion appeared at the very top. Simultaneously, from all four sides, material shot out horizontally. And then there seemed to be a momentary delay before you could see the beginning of the collapse. There was an explosion in the South Tower. One floor under another. When it hit about the fifth floor, I figured it was a bomb because it looked like a synchronized, deliberate kind of thing. Seemed like on television when they blow up these buildings, seemed like it was going all the way around like a belt. All these explosions. The building was blowing out on all four sides. We actually heard the pops, you know? You heard the pops of the building. I thought the terrorists planted explosives somewhere in the building. That's how loud it was. A crackling explosive. Another loud boom at the upper floors, and then a series of smaller explosions which appeared to go completely around the building at the upper floors. And another loud earth-shattering blast with a large fireball that blew out more debris. The lower level of the building, you know, like when they demolish a building? That's what I thought I saw. Did you see any flashes? I said, yes. I thought it was just me. He said, no, I saw them too. Everybody, I think, at this point still thought these things were blown up. So I was fully expecting anything else to blow up. You were there when the planes hit? No, I was there when the building exploded. You mean when it fell down? No, when it exploded. The widely held belief that the Twin Towers collapsed as a result of the airplane impacts and the resulting fires is actually revisionist history. The vast majority of reporters on the ground who witnessed and reported the event firsthand cited explosions as the cause of the collapse. So in addition to all those first responders we just heard from, we're now looking at 36 different TV reporters on the day of 9/11 who reported this as an explosion-based event. Most people have no idea because the story changed abruptly the next day when local TV anchors and national mainstream media outlets reported a different story. Fire Marshal John Coyle and Christopher Fenyo explicitly support this finding. He says, I thought it was exploding, actually. That's what I thought for hours afterward. Everybody, I think, at that point still thought these things were blown up. At that point, a debate began to rage about whether to continue rescue operations in the other still-standing tower. Because the perception was that the building looked like it had been taken out with charges. Well, this gets even more interesting. Graham McQueen and Ted Walters' new research here in this report is the systematic effort to collect and analyze news clips from more than 70 hours of original coverage from that day. And there's three categories of reporting, which will come to eyewitness, narrative, and source-based reporting. Let's listen to a few of them.
But as I was looking up, I saw the entire explosion. It looked exactly like the first two, so we clearly had the most perfect vantage point for that explosion. It was unbelievable.
And there has just been a huge explosion. We can see a billowing smoke rising, and I can't, I'll tell you that I can't see that second tower.
We're not sure exactly what happened, but it was another explosion on the far side of one of the buildings from where we're standing. The reverberation and another explosion on the right-hand side.
Watch the right
it's
side.
It's exploding.
It's ripping apart.
On the far side of the building, there seemed to be another explosion, and also on the right-hand side. There was also another explosion. We're not sure if that was extra reverberation from what happened at the World Trade Center, or if that was an added explosion.
We had a very loud, loud explosion. We hit up. And the building literally began to collapse.
Again, there has been a second explosion here in Manhattan at the Trade Center. We are,
and believe it or not, there was another major explosion. The building itself, literally the top of it, came down, sending smoke and debris everywhere.
Do you know if it was an explosion or if it was a building collapse?
To me, it sounded like an explosion. A huge explosion. A huge rumbling cloud. We're taking photographs and securing this area just prior to that huge explosion that we all heard and felt.
But it literally exploded and came down as though it had been hit.
Heard an explosion.
What had happened was shooting pieces of the planes. There are pieces of the plane on Church Street.
If another explosion, I'd be clear.
Something either exploded or fell off the side of the one building that was attacked.
Then the entire top of the building just blew up.
But 2 seconds ago, there was a huge explosion, and it appears right now the second World Trade Tower has just collapsed.
It was just a small explosion, and then rocks and debris and everything started pouring down.
And we're about two blocks away when the second explosion hit. And all we heard was this small explosion, then we saw a roar of an explosion and all kinds of smoke coming, billowing out, debris falling down.
It's unbelievable because you hear these explosions. In fact, I just heard another one now. I don't know if it was like an after effect or whatnot, just while you were on the phone talking about the explosion.
I'm
hearing another explosion, just say now. I'm hearing another run bump. What you can feel when these tremors come is that it literally comes up under your feet. That's what it feels like. That's the best way not to describe it. Well, we just heard another explosion go off a couple of minutes ago, Chris. That last time when that last collapse happened and when the first tower
there we go.
Collapsed, it was a massive explosion. When that explosion occurred, it was like a scene out of a horror film.
Another explosion of rolling blast of fire, rolling column of fire towards us.
You saw people being wheeled on gurneys away from the site of the explosion. I looked up and that's when I heard the part of me. That's when I heard the explosion. That's when the second tower came down. I can't.
It was an explosion.
2 or 3 minutes ago, there was yet another collapse or explosion. But at 10:45, there was another collapse or explosion following the 10:30 collapse of the second tower.
Saw the explosion and also the collapse of the tower.
With subsequent explosions and explosions were coming down the building. It looked as if charges had been set on each floor and they were in succession going off.
He received word of the possibility of a secondary device, that is another bomb going off. He tried to get his men out as quickly as he could, but he said that there was another explosion which took place. And then an hour after the first hit here, or the first crash that took place, he said there was another explosion that took place in one of the towers here. So obviously, according to his theory, he thinks that there were actually devices that were planted in the building. But the bottom line is that according to the chief of safety of the New York City Fire Department, he says that he probably lost a great many men in those secondary explosions.
I was actually in the subway heading towards the World Trade Center right around Franklin Street. And after the first explosion, the subway station started to fill with smoke. The subway cars started to fill with smoke and the subways actually stopped.
And I was walking on Broadway at Fullerton and suddenly we heard an explosion. It was the first tower coming down. I started to walk out. I walked down Broadway towards Canal and we heard the second explosion.
Covered in the debris and the dust from the explosion itself. I was as it was rocked with a lot of the explosion from the force of the twin World Trade Centers when they came down.
I was out front as you were when the second explosion occurred because the explosion threw debris on top of a lot of people. That was when the real panic began.
Sequence of crashes, then explosions, and then the collapse.
Must have been ground zero where this thing blew up. Car after car after car. Buses completely obliterated and burned straight down to the steel.
That's the first time we're hearing that. So two planes and explosives that were in the building. Is that correct?
That is the working theory at this point.
The first wave of rescue workers who went in were trapped, many of them killed by the second blast.
And escaped through the lobby where they report they believe there was a bomb in the lobby.
So I believe the bomb hit the lobby first and a couple of seconds in the first plane hit.
Well, this is incredible testimony and we have to take it seriously, unlike NIST, who ignored all of these accounts of explosions, save the airplanes into the buildings. So, and claiming there were no other witnesses of explosions. Well, how many did we just see? Well, in terms of the anchors themselves, there were 21 eyewitness reports, what they personally perceived as explosions before and or during the destruction. There were 22 narrative reports wherein they refer to the destruction as an explosion-based event in the course of their reporting. And three were source-based reports from the FDNY, the NYPD, and the FBI, the three most important government agencies involved, who said they suspected that explosives were used to bring down the towers before the story changed. The FBI even called it their working theory. So there's only four reports that describe the collapse as a result of plane impacts and this ensuing fires. What about those? Their individual accounts add very little support to what very soon became the official collapse hypothesis, because two of them were more than 12 blocks away. The third actually stated in a different context, the entire building has just collapsed, as if demolition team set off when you see buildings, demolitions in those old buildings. The fourth was quite close to the South Tower near Ron Insana, another anchor, who vividly described seeing the building exploding and hearing a noise associated with an implosion. So they seem to get discredited. In fact, they're expressing either uninformed opinions or else carrying out someone else's instructions about the cause of the collapse. So what do we learn? Unlike the 118 firefighters, now 186, who provided their accounts weeks or months after the event, it was the job of reporters to spontaneously communicate their perception and interpretation of events. Thus, when their reporting is compiled into one record, we're left with a rich and largely unfiltered collective account of what really took place. Considered alongside the FDNY oral histories, these reporter statements constitute strong corroborating evidence that explosives were indeed used to destroy the towers. So the hypothesis, explosions bringing down the towers, was not only prevalent among the reporters, but clearly the dominant hypothesis of the day. So we have other witnesses of explosions, i.e. the equipment at the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, 21 miles north. There were seismic waves generated when the towers came down and near the time of the plane impacts. So what do they really reveal? Because the first plane impact is associated with a 0.9 magnitude event. Let's look at that event. So this is due to plane impacts because it occurs like pretty much right there. But if you look really carefully, you find that the event itself occurs at 8:46 and 26 seconds. But the plane impacts don't occur until 14 seconds later. So how can the plane impact be causing the seismic event 14 seconds earlier? It's not. And in fact, this says the plane impacts as identified by the National Transportation and Safety Board radar, which the 9/11 Commission used. So it's pretty darn accurate to within a second. But NIST says, no, we think the plane impacts happened 10 seconds earlier than that. Because we looked at the videos and we studied, you know, what we think really happened. Okay, can you prove that? You're still 4 seconds off, right? What gives with that discrepancy also? Well, they got LDEO, Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, run by Columbia University, to move their data back 3 seconds in a private contract, which we do not get to see the results of, the report from. And that's where they make up 3 of those 4 seconds. So, okay, that's real interesting. What else can we learn from their work? The South Tower, we have an event occurring at 9:02 and 54 seconds. Near the time of the plane impact. Well, the plane impact in this case doesn't occur for 17 seconds later. Well, NIST comes back and says, well, we think plane impact happened at a different time, 12 seconds earlier than the NTSB radar. Okay, can you prove that? You're still 5 seconds off? Nope, we just contracted with LDAO to get that one moved back 3 seconds also, which brings them to within 2 seconds. So you can see the kind of science that NIST is up to here. Well, it gets worse. What could cause the seismic impacts if it weren't the planes? Well, let's look at some testimony from eyewitnesses like Mike Percaro. He says the whole building seemed to shake and there was a loud explosion. When the two arrived at the sea level, they found the machine shop gone. Nothing there but a rubble, Mike said. We're talking about a 50-ton hydraulic press gone. The two made their way to the parking garage, but found that it too, the parking garage, was gone. There were no walls. There was no rubble on the floor. You can't see anything. Well, this is down in the basement. NIST doesn't acknowledge any explosions in the basement. But here's a witness, one of several, of one. He says a steel and concrete door that weighed 300 pounds wrinkled up like a piece of aluminum foil lying on the ground. A bomb had gone off in the building. Let's go to this witness, Willie Rodriguez, who was a janitor in the building and was actually given a Medal of Honor by the President of the United States for his courageous actions that day.
I think a bomb went after the lobby first, then a plane hit the building.
The bomb hit the lobby first, and a couple of seconds in the first plane hit.
Okay, now we'll go to Willie Rodriguez.
On 9/11, I came in late, went straight to the basement, and I was there with my supervisor, Antonio Santalamacchia, and 14 other people. When we hear at 8:46, an explosion that went boom, very loud, push us upwards. When they push us upwards, all the walls cracked, the full ceiling fell on top of us, the sprinkler system got activated, everybody started screaming in horror, because we didn't know what happened. And the first thing that comes to my mind is that a generator just blew up on the mechanical room. The mechanical room was located right below us. The building has 6 up levels of basement, B1, B2, all the way down to B6. I was on B1. The explosion came from between B2 and B3. That's how we felt it. Now, I work in the building, Carl, for 20 years. I will know exactly the difference. An explosion coming from the bottom and one coming from the top. This one came from the bottom and prior to the plane hitting the tower. Now, when I went to verbalize it, because everybody's screaming in horror and in total despair at that moment, when I went to verbalize it, we hear, this is 6 or 7 seconds after the initial explosion. And it was the impact. It sounded like an impact all the way on the top of the building and then an explosion. And a person comes running into the office saying, explosion, explosion, hands extended, burned 33% of his body, all the skin hanging from under his armpits, peeled off all the way to the top of the fingertips and missing pieces of his face. And I said, what are you doing? And you know, what happened? This guy was Felipe David, a black guy that I never met before from Honduras, who worked actually filling up those candy machines with supplies, soda, candies, etc. And he was burned 33% of his body from that first explosion. Now, when I see this, everybody's screaming in horror. I say, don't move, because I was going to pick up the phone to call the emergency medical unit that was located on the South Tower. When I went to pick it up, another explosion, and the building shakes so much. And remember, the building was designed to oscillate because of the wind factor. It oscillated so much that the wall started cracking. You could hear the cracking, and everybody started running inside the office.
Well, this is an incredibly important testimony, because it proves that there were indeed explosions that NIST ignored in the basement. But expert Andre Rousseau, applied geophysics expert, author of more than 50 published peer-reviewed papers, says, hey, these are not from plane impacts. The frequency of these seismic waves, Raleigh waves, attributed to LDEO, to the impacts, were on the order of only 1 hertz, 1 cycle per second. But aircraft crash impacts have much higher frequencies, above 10 hertz, and often up to about 100 hertz. These frequencies were filtered out by the 0.6 to 5 hertz bandpass filters used by LDEO, because they just want to record explosions, earthquakes and things like that, at which explosions produce similar results of. So he says the range of the instruments cited by LDEO doesn't even allow for the recording of these frequencies from airplane impacts. The seismic equipment is designed to detect seismic events like earthquakes and explosions around 1 hertz. Okay, well, that's helpful. He also says the actual waves generated by the crash, the airplane crash, had to have been deadened even before hitting the ground. So he's exposing something here that's very important regarding the planes. What about the actual collapses? Because there were seismic events associated near the time of the collapses also. The collapse of the South Tower created a 2.1 magnitude event. Let's look at it. We have the event occurring at 10:28 that morning and 31 seconds. The tower starts descending at 10:28, about 9 seconds earlier. And the first debris, which is the lightest debris, hits the ground about a second later. But the heaviest debris doesn't hit the ground until about 4 seconds later. So that's what would have generated these waves, but it's 4 seconds later than the seismic event. So how could it have? Well, NIST, as you can imagine, has an answer for this too. They contract privately with LDEO, Columbia University, and get them to move their entire data back 3 seconds yet again, a third time. No report. But this helps them account for most of that problem. Well, what else could have created that seismic event? This is important, right? Let's look at the waves themselves. On the left side of the purple dashed line, you see, which is when the tower starts descending. So before the tower starts descending, in fact, about 4 seconds before the tower starts descending, we see very well-formed P waves, primary waves. Well, where did those come from? Because before that, it's just random background, the Earth doing what the Earth does all the time. Well, there, in fact, are explosions going off at near the Twin Towers, as documented by camera shakes 6 and 10 seconds before the tower starts descending. What does that remind me of? How about the testimony of the first responders, 186 of them or so? Well, fewer of them than that were this specific about explosions many seconds before the tower collapsed. Well, here is a camera on the ground looking at the North Tower on a tripod, it is, and it shakes 6 seconds before the collapse. Professor Graham McQueen did this research. There's the shake. That's not me. I'm not shaking the camera or anything. This is all available publicly. And then the tower comes down. So 6 seconds before that shaking, here's another tripod mounted camera on the top of a roof.
This one,
looking at the North Tower. Look carefully. This camera shakes right there. And then, in this case, 10 seconds later, the building begins its sudden uniform downward descent after all these clouds begin to erupt on the top. So this is evidence of seismic signals before the collapses and the cause of them, which is corroborated by the first responders. Let's look at the first one. In the case of the South Tower, 2.1 magnitude event happens at 9:59 that morning and 04 seconds. The start of the tower collapse happens 5 seconds earlier, and the first debris doesn't even hit the ground until 7 seconds after the seismic event. So how can it cause the seismic event? The first debris is the lightest, the later. So what can cause that? Well, NIST says, we actually contracted yet again with LDEO and got them to move their data back 3 seconds. That's what we think gets us close enough to answering the question. Well, it doesn't. It's a clear case of fraud, especially when you consider what really could have brought down the South Tower. In this case, yet again, we have at 9:58 and 56 seconds, another camera, tripod mounted, shaking. In this case, 3 seconds before the start of the collapse, again, corroborating those first responders who described explosions before the collapse. Well, there's a problem here. They say it's due to the debris hitting the ground, but let's look at the reality. This is not ground. It's concrete floors dampening yet again that direct connection of this collapse to the seismic equipment 20 miles north. The concrete floors, floor trusses, and gypsum board walls, these building contents were actually, as we'll see in a moment, pulverized to concrete powder. There's no seismic component hardly at all from them. The steel frame itself is shattered into individual wall units, as we'll see, that are 4 to 8 tons each, which is relatively small, seismically speaking. They don't even hit the ground all at once, but they're scattered over a period of 15 seconds. And on a 7-story concrete basement structure. So this is all comes out by through the work of Andre Rousseau. It's equally distributed over the entire superblock of the World Trade Center. And note that as you see the towers coming down simultaneously in this case, so we can compare them, they are nearly identical collapses or destruction, as we'll see. They have identical buildings, they're twins, but the yield strength is 1.6 times greater in the North Tower than the South. And so that is dramatically different. It's on the logarithmic scale, so it's 1.6 times greater energetically. Well, how can that be if they're identical collapses and identical buildings? So the answer must and can only be that there were different quantities and or placement of explosives in the building. Andre Rousseau says, identical buildings and nearly identical collapses can't possibly produce seismic events of extreme different energy releases on an order of magnitude. Well, that's very helpful. Well, this documentation of the seismic evidence is actually very carefully pointed out in point TT7. Why did the Twin Towers collapse? The seismic evidence in the consensus 9/11, the best 9/11 evidence. You can see this work at consensus911.org. Elizabeth Woodworth and David Ray Griffin assembled this group very carefully to present only the best evidence of all, and you're looking at it in this presentation substantially relative to the World Trade Center. Feature number three, is there a straight down symmetrical collapse? Well, let's look at it. It starts out as if it's tipping over. So it's tipping over at 22 degrees, the South Tower, with asymmetrical damage from the airplanes and the fires, and asymmetrical damage from this load that's falling off the building. How do we get complete symmetrical destruction all the way around the face, all four faces of these buildings? It makes no sense. It's incongruent. Just like the firefighters described, all the way around the building, like a belt, all these explosions. So something else is happening here very specifically. Let's look and zoom in on this looped video to the leading corner of this destruction. What do we see? We see what can only be individually pre-placed explosives at the perimeter structure. I see a dozen of them just right here. So what is this not? This is not energy weapons weakening the steel so it could have a natural collapse. No, this can only be pre-placed, relatively small explosives. It's not a nuclear weapon destroying the towers. So these are theories that have been put out there that are and have been debunked by the evidence we saw last week with the extreme heat from the molten iron from OSHA documenting 2600 degree temperatures in that case, molten metal, molten iron and steel, which takes 3000 degrees almost to begin to melt. So this is extreme heat, which is denied in the directed energy weapons theory that we looked very carefully at. The explosives are denied in the directed energy weapons theory. No explosions, no extreme heat, no nanothermite, no thermite. That is what they say. And yet what we proved last week was that we have all four of those, forensic evidence of all four of those phenomena at the World Trade Center towers. So this is the evidence that has solid proof for it. And they say there's no evidence of isolated explosive ejections from the towers, but you're looking at it here, 20, even 40 stories down below, we have these squibs or isolated explosive ejections occurring 60 stories down below. There's no accounting for these in the official narrative or any unofficial narrative other than the one that we're presenting here today. Out of the left side of the South Tower, during its collapse, we even see isolated explosive ejections, a dozen of them in this looped video, destroying the internal rigidity of this structure, which allows it, as even as it begins to fall off the tower, it then settles down because it's lost its internal rigidity and just begins to fall back into the tower as a mass. Well, how fast do they fall? Well, David Chandler, physics teacher, actually clocks this, and this is very important because it falls near free fall acceleration. It's accelerating straight down through the path of greatest resistance at 2/3 of free fall acceleration, which equates to the fact that 90% of the structure had to have been removed so that it could fall. And through what? Through 80,000 tons of structural steel beneath the point of plane impacts, as if it weren't even there. These columns and the core columns, 47 of them, massive columns, again, at halfway down, 52 inches by 22 inches, gave almost no resistance. Only 10% of their strength remained. Compare that to the World Trade Center 7, which did fall at free fall acceleration indicating not one of those 80 columns gave any resistance to that building's collapse. So what happens to these perimeter structural steel sections? They are ejected laterally, 4 and 8 ton perimeter steel framing, landing in the buildings all around them, ejected 600 feet in every direction at 80 miles an hour, clocked by physicists, landing 600 feet away. This is not energy weapons. This is the result of explosive force, a massive explosive force that can move these 4 and 8 ton structural steel sections that far. And they are freely flying. This is not like a banana peeling off the side of the towers, like some debunkers have tried to hypothesize. This is hundreds of structural steel sections freely flying, laterally ejected. Look at this one. Back to, forward to, back to. This is laterally ejected. How does gravity work? Gravity works down. What's going on here? Out. And this one is, in fact, hitting Building 7. So, which did some damage over there, as we looked at last week. There's enough energy to hurl a 200-pound cannonball 3 miles. This is an amazing quantity of energy that completely covered the and beyond the boundary of the World Trade Center towers, impacting Building 7 to the north and the World Financial Center to the east, west, to the left. By the way, if 100,000 tons of structural steel framing is distributed outside the building's footprint, we have to ask ourselves the question, what's destroying the building? What's crushing the building? Almost all the steel is well outside the footprint of the tower. How can it then also crush the building? Well, maybe it was the concrete, because there were 110 floors of concrete. We're going to be looking for them, each an acre in size. Poured concrete on metal decking over lightweight steel trusses. We're going to be looking for 110 acre-sized floors, but we don't find 50. We don't find 20. We don't find 10. We don't find 1 acre-sized floor. We don't find a half or a quarter or an eighth of an acre-sized concrete floor. What we see at the bottom is a pile, 4 or 6-story pile of miscellaneous metal columns. Hey, in a real concrete, in a real pancaking collapse like this one from an earthquake in Mexico, we see pancakes. We're looking for them, but we don't find them. Where are all the floors? Where is the concrete? What happened to it?
I hope you're learning a lot. You know, what happened to the 110 one-acre size concrete slabs? It's so overwhelming once you see it. But George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld, in my opinion, were obviously involved in it. And we know that because they had talked about months earlier that the Patriot Act that they'd already written, why would they have already written the Patriot Act if the terrorist attacks hadn't happened yet? But they'd already written it, and they said the only way we're going to get this Patriot Act to go through is if we have a modern-day Pearl Harbor. That's word for word, Dick Cheney. Well, they got their modern-day Pearl Harbor because they are evil, wicked people.
Where are all the floors? Where is the concrete? What happened to it? Oh, there it is. It's pulverized in midair. 90,000 tons of concrete. All the videos, all the photos show pulverized in midair. to 100 micron particles and distributed laterally across lower Manhattan in a 3 square mile area in a blanket 3 inches thick. So, if that's true, and you're looking at the proof of that truth, and 90,000 tons of concrete is pulverized and spread from river to river across lower Manhattan, what's crushing the building? It wasn't the steel, which was a third of the weight of the building. It's not the concrete, which is another third of the weight of this building. Where is Bazant, Zdenek Bazant, getting all of the weight to crush the building below? Well, not only did he use all of the weight of all that concrete and all that steel, which wasn't there, but he multiplied it times two. Because engineers finally, after 10 years, decoded this obscure piece of mathematical wizardry. And they found that he doubled the mass up above and he decreased the column strength below by a factor of 3, rigging the entire equation in favor of a collapse. And yet, this paper remains the key theoretical basis for NIST's column failure theory. There are many errors, not just 6, but here's 6 that were put forth by this team of engineers that decoded his work, Tony Zambodi, Richard Johns, Gregory Zudolinsky. And the American Society of Civil Engineers said, we're not going to publish this. What? Why? It's out of scope, they said. Well, wait a minute. How is it out of scope to challenge the concepts and facts in a previously published paper in the Journal of Engineering Mechanics, in this case? That's the whole idea of peer-reviewed science. We challenge each other's work through the peer-reviewed process. So there's a lawsuit and an ethics violation proceeding from this. As you can imagine, we have to have a way to get explosives and incendiaries into the building. How do we do that? Well, Kevin Ryan, from his blog digwithin.net, looks at demolition access to the towers. Could it be that the nanothermite, which we saw proof of in our last episode, was installed during an operation that was said to have been fireproofing, because there were fireproofing upgrades in the year before 9/11. In fact, those fireproofing upgrades occur coincidentally at the location of the plane impacts in each case. So that's got to be investigated by a real criminal investigator who could get to the bottom of it. But our government has not done that. How else could explosives have been brought into the building? Well, if you had access to the elevators in the building, you'd have access to the core columns in the building. And wouldn't it be convenient if you had the largest elevator modernization in the world going on the 9 months prior to 9/11, which they did, documented in Elevator World, March 2001. And why would the Port Authority have given one of the largest and most sophisticated elevator modernization programs in history to a small maintenance company, Ace Elevator, with basically only one customer? Well, this has to be answered too. We certainly want an investigation of Ace Elevators, whose employees were missing that day, curiously, from this elevator modernization work. There was a labor dispute, and the members of that company, 50 of them, were pulled out to a union meeting to discuss some business. Well, yeah, we got to get to the bottom of that too, as well as the disposition of 180,000 tons of missing steel in easily the largest and most perplexing structural failures in history. We have 400 truckloads a day lined up to remove this debris starting just 2 weeks after 9/11. In fact, starting the day of 9/11. This is the forensic evidence. It was shipped to China for recycling. This is the illegal destruction of evidence in a crime scene, prompting Bill Manning, editor-in-chief of Fire Engineering Magazine, to cry out, "Crucial evidence that could answer many questions is on the slow boat to China, showing an astounding ignorance of government officials to the value of a thorough scientific investigation. The destruction and removal of evidence must stop immediately." Did it? No. It continued unabated. And that is just one of the many, many reasons we have a real call for an investigation based on the evidence of destruction with explosives, which is the only thing that can answer these 10 key characteristic and some very uncharacteristic features of controlled demolition. Fire doesn't account for any one of these features, let alone all 10 of them. And so we have what becomes proof of controlled demolition, proof to 3,600 architects and engineers signed on to the petition demanding a new investigation.
Well, I hope you learned a lot or were reminded of some things that you already knew. But that issue, again, I think it's the single most important event to understand in our lifetime so that we're never deceived again by the people that pretend to represent us, pretend to be doing what's best for our country, but continue to keep President Trump, Robert F. Kennedy, and all those around him in your prayers that God would save them, he would bless their efforts to do what is right, and that the momentum would continue to be there, where over the next 4 years, a tremendous amount of good and progress is made toward removing the evil from our country, the corruption, and that people's eyes would just be open to see the truth. Our verse for this week is Romans 5:8. But God commendeth his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. What a loving God that while we were wicked, vile sinners, breaking his laws, doing whatever we wanted, he said, no, I'm going to go die for them because I want to be able to set them free from their sins. Be grateful for that. And I just appreciate you. Contact us if you'd like me to come speak to your group. But until next week, God bless you.